Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Let's check in with the Northwestern Wildcats as they get ready a week out from facing the Utah Utes in the Las Vegas Bowl. Louis Vaquer from Wildcat Report, part of the Rivals Network, joins Michelle and I here on the program. Louis, thanks for taking the time. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let's start here. Pretty incredible season, all things considered, for Northwestern. They go 7-5. David Braun, who was the interim, has that interim tag lifted. Just give us a sense for your perception of how the overall season has played out to this point for the Wildcats.
Oh, I think they've far exceeded anybody's expectations to start the year. You know, they had the hazing scandal over the summer. They fired Pat Fitzgerald. There's lawsuits swirling everywhere. Some people leave the program. I mean, it looked like a disaster. The over-under for wins was 2.5. And David Braun, who, you know, never been a head coach before, had no FBS experience, comes in and just did a miracle job. You know, they really had a heck of a season. I think the turning point was a win over Minnesota in September, where they had a 31-10 deficit in the fourth quarter, came back and won in overtime, and that kind of flipped their season, and they closed with three straight wins. To, you know, to be sitting here at 7-5 and going to a bowl game, I think is just far beyond, you know, even the purplest of Northwestern's fans' wildest dreams. I don't think they would have thought this season was coming. So yeah, it's been a heck of a ride for Northwestern fans.
So, I mean, I know kind of what I was thinking and feeling over the summer as these reports were coming out about Northwestern, you know, from the comfort of Salt Lake City, thousands of miles away. I'm wondering, as someone that's more in the thick of it, you know, what was going through your mind as these reports were coming out, and how aware were you beforehand that something was maybe going on?
Oh, there was zero awareness. I mean, it was an unbelievable situation. First of all, it was awful. You know, as someone covering the program, it was, you know, I never used the word alleged many times in my life over those couple weeks and all these lawsuits coming out. And, you know, Pat Fitzgerald was a revered figure. You're talking about one of the greatest players ever had, the all-time winningest coach. Everybody loved the guy, and, you know, he did things the right way, but there were things going on in the program no one had any idea about. And this, so it was a shock to see him get fired, and really everything looked to be falling apart, and it was an embarrassing scandal. I think a lot of people put their purple away, you know, fans and stuff that were kind of ashamed of the whole thing. And that's why this season, you talk about a dream kind of scenario, is a best case scenario. And, you know, on top of it this summer too, I think the NU administration looked really bad, and the way they handled it was awful. And so, you know, to have them, they hired David Braun, which no one really knew, and he turned out to be a heck of a coach. I don't think they had any idea he'd have this kind of season. And now things are really looking up. You know, they have a coach they like in place, and you know, he'll have to develop a little bit on the job, but things are, you know, looking up, I think, again, for Northwestern football, and certainly much better than they were in July.
Louis, what's the excitement level from Northwestern fans in terms of making it to a bowl game and heading to Vegas to take on the Utes?
Yeah, I think people are excited. Like I said, I don't think anybody foresaw any kind of bowl game, so this is a bonus, and they hadn't been in a couple years. And, you know, they haven't been in the bowl since 2000. They had two dreadful years, you know, coming off. They were 3-9 in 2021. They went 1-11 in 2022. So I don't think, you know, anybody saw this coming at all. Even taking the whole coaching situation, a hazing scandal out, I don't think anybody would have thought that they'd be in a bowl game. I don't know how many people will travel. You know, Northwestern doesn't draw a lot of fans, and now, especially this year, you know, there were a lot of people ticked off at the administration and the way Fitz was fired and things like that. So attendance, which is always a challenge, was down a little bit. But typically Northwestern travels pretty well for bowl games because they do have a national alumni base. So it'll be interesting to see how many people they draw out there. I'm not really sure about how many people are going, but fans in general, I think they're excited to be in any kind of a bowl this year.
Tell me, what is it, do you think, about Coach Braun that's allowed him to have the kind of success he's had? Are there any specific characteristics or anything kind of along those lines that have made him really effective in handling kind of some chaos and weathering the storm?
Yeah, I think number one, he had an incredible connection with the players, and that was from the outset. I mean, they picked him to take over, and this is a guy that just got the job. He was hired to be a defensive coordinator last January, and then in July, Pat Fitzgerald gets fired, and they wanted David Braun to take over. And that, I think that says a lot about who he is and how the players felt about him. He's just such a genuine, earnest guy. You know, he's no nonsense. He's a very easy guy to talk to, and he connects with the players and they believe in him. And, you know, he did everything, even over the summer and in the first weeks and then through camp, it was all about supporting the players that are going through this adversity and these difficult times and just trying to keep that locker room together. And he managed to keep them. I mean, they just been focused on the game. I mean, I don't think any team in America was more looking forward to the start of the season, you know, to put everything behind them and just get back to playing football. And he managed to keep them focused week to week with all this stuff going around. And, you know, it really galvanized the locker room a little bit. They had a little bit of a us against the world mentality. And as the season went on, they got better and better. And I think they were playing their best football at the end of the season.
Now, they've played two different quarterbacks. Ben Bryant, he's a transfer from Cincinnati, and then Brendan Sullivan also having played. What's the quarterback situation going into the bowl game?
Yeah, Ben Bryant is the starter. I mean, when he's healthy, he's number one, and they're fortunate to have an experienced backup like Brendan Sullivan, especially nowadays you know, very, very few people have experienced quarterbacks because they all leave town if they don't get the starting job. But Bryant is the guy. He's, you know, this is his sixth year. He started the last 3 years at Eastern Michigan, at Cincinnati, and then at Northwestern. He's got a lot of football under him. You know, he's just a very steady veteran presence. He knows where the ball is supposed to go. He gets rid of it. Just a very smart quarterback. He's not going to wow anybody with a big arm, but he can make all the throws. And he's their leader, no question about it. And they're a different team with him behind center, no doubt about it.
Utah obviously has some injuries that have kept some guys out this year. They also have had some guys hit the transfer portal. What is Northwestern looking like on that front?
Yeah, they've had one guy enter the transfer portal, Josh Preeb, who's a starting guard. He's been the starter for a couple years now. So that's a big hit to the offensive line because they've struggled this year. The offensive line is probably the biggest weakness, I would say, on the team. They didn't have much of a running game, and they also gave up, I think it was 48 sacks on the year, which is, I think, fourth worst in FBS football this year. So that's going to be a loss. But other than that, they've had a few other players that, you know, weren't really on the depth chart and didn't get a whole lot of action. So they're in pretty good shape. Health-wise, I don't think there's anything new either. So, I know it's funny because Utah, you know, you look at this game – and you'd think Utah would be the favorite, but boy, I don't know who's playing for the Utes. You know, there's so many guys left.
We don't know either. We actually work here.
Yeah, and they got a quarterback who's playing, but he's in the portal, and all these receivers left. And it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, and that's just the reality of college football now in the bowl season. That's just the way it is.
Louis Vacher joining us. He obviously covers Northwestern now. Louis, with regards to the future for Northwestern in the Big Ten, I know that they're building a new stadium there for Northwestern in Evanston. Where do you see Northwestern's, I guess, place in this new look Big Ten? Because you have the 4 teams from the Pac-12 entering the conference here. What's it going to look like for Northwestern moving forward?
Yeah, it's going to get a whole lot tougher for Northwestern. I don't think there's any question about that. And they do have a new stadium. They're looking to break ground on soon. It's $800 million. It's going to be beautiful. And they've got a great facility, one of the best in the country, too. But, you know, I think they appeared in two Big Ten championship games in the last 5 years, in 2018 and 2020. But that was a lot because they were in the West Division. You know, the Big Ten West is, you know, defense, offensively challenged programs with, you know, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska. Now that goes away. you add Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, it's going to get a whole lot tougher. I mean, I don't think, you know, they're not going to see Indianapolis again for quite a while, if ever. I mean, it's going to be really hard to break into the top two to get to the Big Ten championship game. And, you know, just those, you got four really good programs coming in and they lose that kind of safe place they had there in the Big Ten West. So, yeah, it's, there's no question about it. It's going to be a whole lot tougher for Northwestern to compete going forward.
Looking ahead to this game, what do you think are going to be the key matchups between Utah and Northwestern that will sway the game in favor of one over the other?
Yeah, I think Northwestern is going to be all about protecting Ben Bryant, you know, and that's going to be a challenge. Utah does get after the quarterback. Mr. Ellis is, you know, I think he had, what, 12 sacks this year. He was one of the top guys in college football. They don't have much of a running game. They didn't really run the ball with any consistency. It would pop up here and there, but it wasn't anything that could control the clock, control the game. So it's going to be all about Ben Bryant in the passing game and whether they can protect him. And I think defensively, you know, Northwestern plays a, you know, they play kind of a shell defense. They'll play cover four. They'll keep their safeties back in the back end and just keep everything in front of them and force you to, if you're going to score on them, they want you to go 10, 12, 15 plays or something like that. That's kind of the way they play. Take away the big play and make you earn it. And they've been pretty solid. There's no question the defense is Northwestern's strength of their team, without a doubt. So I think it'll be a low-scoring game. And again, with Utah, there's so many question marks. I'm not sure what to expect out of them. And so many times you don't know how teams – I mean, Northwestern is thrilled to be playing in a bowl game. They're going to be ready to go. They've got their team intact. And, you know, they're 7-5. It's not a powerhouse football team or anything, but they'll be ready to go. They're excited to play in a bowl game. And, you know, a lot of teams maybe not. And I don't know where Utah's head is, especially with all of these guys that have left the program. And you got a quarterback who's in the portal that's going to be playing. And it's just a weird situation. So I'm not really sure what to expect, to be honest.
Now, Northwestern's got two linebackers that have 100 tackles on the season. It's rare in these days to even see one guy on a team have 100-plus tackles. This defense seems to really get after it, though.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, like I said, the defense is the strength of the team. They've got two very active linebackers. Bryce Gallagher led the team in tackles. He's a captain. He's a leader. He's been there for a long time, and he's the unquestioned leader of that defense. Makes a lot of tackles. He's more of the in-the-box guy that makes a lot of plays between the tackles. And then Xander Mueller is the other one, and he makes a lot of big plays. He led the team in tackles for loss this year. They like to send him on blitzes. He was one of their top. They're one of their leaders in sacks as well. And then their secondary, they got a couple really good safeties. They like to play five D-backs a lot back there. So they've got three really good safeties and Coco Azuma and Devin Turner and Rod Hurd. That, you know, guys that have played a lot of football, they're veterans back there. And that's the strength of the unit, no question.
All right, so I got one other question for you here, Louie, and that's these two programs do have some history together. They played in that Holiday Bowl, and it was kind of a tale of two halves in many respects.
Yeah.
when they took on one another. Does Northwestern have any, like, with the new coaching staff, turnover rosters and all that, is there really any feel between these two teams because of that game at all that you're aware of?
Well, that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple guys that were on the roster, I believe, but, you know, they weren't playing or anything like that. And that was a wild game. I mean, that was a heck of so. 2018 was a phenomenal season for Northwestern. They got to the Big Ten title game. They won the West, and they got out there, and I think it was 20-3 at halftime, and they scored four touchdowns in the third quarter. That was a crazy game. And so, yeah, that's a great memory, I think, for all Northwestern fans. And, you know, these two teams have played three times in history all time. I think it was like in the 20s and in 1981 and then in 2018. So, I mean, there's not a lot of history there. There's not a lot of familiarity. But like I said, I think Northwestern fans are and the players, the whole program, I think, is just excited to be playing in a bowl game. And, you know, they're happy to be there for sure.
Well, Louie, cannot thank you enough for taking some time to join us here on the show. We're looking forward to the game, and obviously we'll be in touch to get you on probably throughout this upcoming week as the game gets a little bit closer, all right?
Sounds great, guys. Well, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. There you go. Louis Vacherie covers Northwestern for Wildcat Report, part of the Rivals Network. And I kind of got the same feel that, like, this is a Northwestern fan base and team that, like, you know what? We overachieved this year. Let's go celebrate a little bit. And that's it stands kind of in contrast to Utah, where it's like, okay, well, we're here.
And I mean, look, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
It's and I don't think either side is wrong for how they feel.
No.
You know?
Let me be very clear. I'm not trying to denigrate what you, like, just,
right.
Utah, they're coming off two Rose Bowl appearances.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I mean, like, it is hard to get excited for the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're doing a good job of finding and picking out things to kind of focus on that does make it exciting, but it is also just a very different feel than it has been the last couple of years. And like I said, I understand it. I get it. You know, I even kind of feel that way. You know, it's a very, very different thing. But I think there is at least understanding that there's still value here.
Sure.
So it's going to be interesting though, to see what that ultimately looks like out on the field next Saturday.
Yeah. It'll be a fun game all the same. It's Vegas. It's the Allegiant Stadium there. Like here's the thing. You want to really, like, if this was still in the Sam Boyd Stadium, I'd be like, yeah, I don't blame you for wanting to, like, check out at all, because trust me, Sam Boyd, man.
Ooh, man, they would just turn the music up and that press box would start rattling. It was a little nerve-wracking. I was like, we're all going to just, like, come tumbling down on everyone, huh?
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see how it goes. I am very interested to see how obviously the Utes handle this. It sounds like Northwestern's up for it, and as they should be, because everybody, and trust me, I was like, oh, that when that whole thing went down, like, well, there goes Northwestern season.
Yeah, that just seemed like a very impossible hurdle to overcome. But you know what? We here in Salt Lake should probably know a little bit better than that.
We should, but it's too easy just to be like, yeah, okay, yeah, they're done. And that, it's sad to say, because you want to think, okay, but when situations like that really kind of come right when the season's about to begin, you're like, I don't know how any team's going to rally from this. And that's a big credit to David Braun for being able to step in. Because as Louis points out, he didn't have any FBS experience. He was a defensive coordinator at North Dakota State. Mm-hmm. And awesome to see him kind of get to rally the troops, so to say, and get them rolling.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great success story. And hopefully that continues. Hopefully it's a sign that he's a good coach for him,
sure,
and a good fit, and that this wasn't just like a weird, fluky, well, everybody kind of rallied around this thing, and now that this thing is no longer a thing, it falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be fascinating to watch for a little while, in my opinion.
They will be. And the other thing about it is it's going to be curious. Like, I asked him that question about how they fit into the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very high-level academic school competing in one of the preeminent conferences. It's like, man, you got an uphill climb, honestly.
I mean, it's you kind of look at Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, it's both of these programs have had their kind of moment in the sun,
sure,
where they've been pretty dang good.
Just this past season, past two seasons under Mike Elko, they've done a good job, and their coach gets plucked away.
Right. You know, but their primary focus is and always has been and always will be academics, and mm-hmm. that makes your recruiting pool very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, to draw upon, and so it kind of limits your success in a lot of ways, and
it puts a ceiling on you for sure.
Absolutely, and then when you start adding in other teams that have been kind of traditional powers in their respective places and don't have quite those restrictions, it's going to be a gauntlet. It's going to be tough.
We shall see. Interesting times, and obviously just looking forward to the game. That's the thing about it, is we're a week away. And the nice part is here on the station, we're going to have both the famous Idaho Potato Bowl and the Las Vegas Bowl for you on the zone.
Woo!
So tune in for that. It'll be a nice Saturday full of football for you as the Utes and the Aggies finish out their seasons. All right, coming up next, we get to 5 minutes of talking about some of the other topics we have not had a chance to touch on quite yet. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. don't want a lot for Christmas. I'm just going to say it. This is the GOAT of Christmas songs. I don't care what people say. Mariah nailed it with this one. You got to look on your face like you're like, you think I'm crazy.
I still personally think it's Nat King Cole's Chestnuts Roasting.
It's a good one. Christmas song.
Yeah. To me, that's the epitome of Christmas, but like, I get it. This was just such a commercial success.
It's Mariah. Come on.
My Scrooge of a host, this is like the only, just because he loves Mariah, this is like the only song he's okay with.
Jake Scott really, he's only okay with this song, really.
That is hysterically funny. I never would have taken Jake Scott for a Mariah Carey
fan. You know,
fan.
And he's a Swiftie? Who would have thought?
I think that's more recent than anything else.
It's so interesting to me.
I can dig it. I am neither really a Mariah fan or a Taylor Swift fan. I don't dislike either of them, but like, I'm just not like, oh my gosh.
You mean you're not dropping thousands of dollars to go to support the soon-to-be billionaire if she's not already billionaire? In Taylor Swift?
No. I'll just, you know, probably.
You're not going to go sit through a 3-hour concert movie?
No.
In theaters?
No.
Really?
No.
I'm kidding.
No.
I'm the same way.
You know, it's, I'm much more of a like Beyonce girl, and I won't even watch Beyonce's movies.
Why do you need to watch a movie of a concert you've already been to? But that's my question.
Well, I think it's for the people who weren't able to go to the concert more so.
Yeah, but it seemed, like, it seemed like more people went that had already been dropping major coin to go to said concert to watch it a second time. That's I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Fun times. All right. Other topics we still need to talk about today. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the Pac-12, Michelle. Now, the appeal yesterday from the 10 schools exiting the conference yesterday was rejected by the Court of Appeals. It had been appealed to. So therefore, the lower court ruling, which essentially hands full control of the Pac-12, its assets, and the decision-making process moving forward, resides with the Pac-2, speaking of Oregon State and Washington State. Now, this means that in theory, the Beavers and the Cougars control what some estimate maybe as much as $400 million in assets.
Good for them. I do wonder, though, lower court. So, I mean, we're probably going to see this upped, would be my guess.
We'll
or
see.
Is that possible?
So the lower court ruling did say when they initially ruled in favor of Washington and Oregon State, it did say in there they need to make decisions that essentially are in good faith.
Yeah.
Like, not to be vindictive towards the exiting 10, even though I'm sure there's some thought on those two's part that they're like, yeah, bleep you all. And
well, I
and we get it.
Like, I get it. Now, some of the teams that are leaving didn't want to more than others.
Yes, Utah did not want to leave.
But yes, I get it. I get it.
So the question I have, because here's the thing, if they start acting in bad faith, that's when I think it gets appealed back up. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
Okay, in theory, what Washington State and Oregon State could do now is they could tell the other 10 schools, pound sand, you're not getting a dime of the money that you think you're getting out of us.
Right.
We're controlling it all. And then they could go out, essentially, and start rebuilding the pack, whatever they want it to be conference. They could pick off the San Diego States, the Fresno States, from the pack, from the Mountain West. They could go maybe pick off a couple from the AAC and recreate a conference as they see it. And use, like I said, some people say it's up to $400 million. To do that, they can pay the buyouts for these schools and rebuild it that way. I'm interested to see where all of this goes.
Yeah.
Because I've got to think that those two schools are like, y'all left us out to dry. Why in the you know what do we want to help any of y'all? And why should you guys expect a dime from us?
I mean, that would not surprise me in the slightest. And again, I get it. I so get it. And I so think it's wrong that those two schools didn't get picked up anywhere.
Sure.
But I'm not the one in charge of all of this decision making.
Yeah.
I should be, but I'm not. So you know, I feel for them. And this feels like a big win for those two schools. I think there probably is a balance of making sure that you take care of yourselves mm-hmm. without being vindictive and perhaps crossing that line. But this is just kind of one of those things. I think we're probably going to be watching it for at least another year, if not longer. I think there's going to be some twists and turns here.
I think you're right in that. I am curious what the two schools are thinking, what they're going to do, because they already have that scheduling agreement with Mountain West next year. I believe we saw Utah State yesterday actually will make a trip to Washington State next year as part of that scheduling agreement. And there's some thought of me that why don't you guys essentially take those assets and just kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say join the Mountain West, but
right.
join forces with them. And make the best of your situation. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
You have a bunch of assets that could obviously help your, like you said, help establish yourselves, but also help establish the Mountain West, maybe more prominence. I'm just interested to see where the future goes, because this is conference realignment. It's messy. It's super messy. It sucks that the Pac-12 is going away. PK, he's talked about, he's got 45 years of having watched it growing up. He grew up in Arizona when the Arizona schools joined the conference. He's watched it all that time. He worked in LA. Like, he's worked here. It's his baby. It's gone away. And I know that Utah fans really, really enjoyed that. Was it 13 seasons all told? Mm-hmm. In the Pac-12, and you win two Pac-12 titles, you went to four straight Pac-12 title games. Like, there is so much good history there that it's literally just kind of being tossed to the side, and it's like, wow, where did all that go?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to see something like that go, and I know that there is that faction of, we'll move on and just be grateful that you're, and I think people are. But, like, it's really, really rough to have something that you work so hard to build and be torn away like that. And granted, again, we can go into the there's a lot of you did it to yourselves. There were also people that helped push you off the cliff. You know, there was some backstabbing. Like, it was like watching an episode of The Real Housewives. Like, it's that's what conference realignment is in 2023.
I've seen exactly one episode of A Real Housewives. I watched the premiere of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, finished it. Me and my wife looked at each other and said, nah. But I get what you're talking about. Like, a bunch of it is drama that in some ways either was contrived or was forced from the outside.
Self-inflicted.
Yeah, self-inflicted, like, at times too, yes.
It had it all. It had all the drama. All of it.
It did. And it's crazy to think it's going away, but I don't know. It's just, it's so weird. And by the way, I'm going to give a tip of the cap to the Big 12. Like, if you can't have Big 12 media days in Dallas, Vegas is a great spot.
I mean, this does raise a question, though. Does everything ultimately eventually get moved to Vegas? I get the centrality part of it, but at the same time, some of the moves that your marks made has been a little showboaty, and where is more showboaty than Las Vegas?
Bingo. Come
right?
On. It fits your mark's vision for the Big 12 to a T. Like, okay, here's the thing. Kansas City, fine place. You compare Kansas City and Vegas? No, and this is my West Coast bias rolling in, where I can drive to Vegas, have to fly to Kansas City, have to fly to Dallas, Fort Worth. Like, Vegas to me is like, the Pac-12 is exiting there.
Yeah.
Why don't you move in and just encroach on that territory and make it your own? I know it's on the western flank of the conference. We get all that. But here's the thing. There are a few airports that have, like, direct flights from literally everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, is it Harry Reid International now? It's no longer McCarran. I think they renamed it.
I think it is Harry Reid. Whatever.
But they have flights from everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you're in West Virginia. I don't care if you're in Ames, Iowa. I don't care if you're in Orlando, Florida, or wherever you are in this new Big 12. You can get a flight to Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, and this might sound really mean, but reality is, I think more of the western flank of the conference is going to be the one that benefits from that anyway.
Sure.
And I'm not even solely talking about Utah. I'm thinking about, you know, Kansas has been pretty good. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State always has a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just Utah and Arizona. It just feels like that western half is set up to be better than the eastern half anyway.
Don't
come after me.
I literally just saw this. So Tim Fitzgerald, he covers Kansas State, Life of Fitz on Twitter. Does it for 24/7 Sports. So not sure if you saw this, but next summer's Big 12 Media Days event before football season will be in Las Vegas. I owe it to K-State Nation to provide the most in-depth coverage possible. Days be damned, I am covering the Big 12 Media Week. Some guy responds, literally, I'm just saying this as you were talking. Yeah. Some guy responds, way to go, Big 12. Vegas? Really? I didn't know UNLV joined the conference. It's not about UNLV.
No.
It fits to your point.
It seems to fit your Mark's vision
exactly.
For the conference.
It gives you a huge stage. It's got the glitz, the glam. It's got everything that Brett Yormark is about.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Out the, you Come know
on.
What.
They're saying they're going to have it at the, they're deciding between the Sphere, Allegiant, or one of the MGM resorts.
Oh, you know he's going to make the Sphere happen. That's what's going to happen.
There's going to be the new Big 12, because apparently they're going to rebrand the Big 12 next year.
Yeah.
The Big 12 logo is going to be all over that Sphere. Come on.
I get it, man. And here's the thing. I don't really love a lot of what your Mark's doing. It's just not for me. But in the grand scheme of what he's trying to do, Vegas for everything just fits the bill.
Yeah.
It just does. I'm sorry.
Sure.
But I'm also not sorry because, like, that's just what it is.
Yeah. It fits so well with what just kind of seems like the direction he's pushing this conference.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. You got an opportunity. Like, and Vegas is building something, like, sports-wise.
Well, and that's just it, too. I think Vegas is really trying to turn into kind of an upper-class sports community.
You're
watching, you know, I mean, like, I think the 90s and the 2000s were really about, like, the showgirls and, like, the sex appeal and all that
sure.
kind of stuff. That's, like, what they built the brand on. And now they're trying to clean that up. And what better way to clean that up than make it a sports town? You bring in sports betting. You kind of move away from some of the other betting that's out there. You bring in concerts.
Be part of it, but yeah.
You know, the kind of big residency shows. You're just trying to bring in high-class clients, whether it's, you know, from the entertainment industry or whether it's from the mm-hmm. sports industry, and have it be like a big mashup conglomerate of where everybody goes and hangs out and just does really, like, glitzy, glammy things.
It's an entertainment.
It is.
It's entertainment, and sports is part of that. There's no doubt about that. Other thing real quick before we go here, Michelle. NFL this weekend, we got three games today. We already have one underway. Vikings leading the Bengals 7-3 in Cincinnati. If you're planning on watching any of these, hope you have the NFL Network because all three of them are on there. I actually really like how the NFL, you know, the NFL controls everything.
Oh,
but it's genius what they're doing. Like, okay, we have a Saturday where bowl games are just kicking off and they're kind of lower level. Yeah, we're going to put three games, triple header, go.
Yeah.
Like, we're putting a game on Black Friday. Like, they are the NFL, for everything that they do that seems out of touch, and they know what they're doing when it comes to dominating the sports conversation.
Right.
They have games in high-profile windows, and they're taking advantage of it. You got Steelers-Colts coming up this afternoon, and then Broncos-Lions. Each of these games have intrigue because the Vikings and the Bengals 7-6 battling for their playoff lives here in the final stretch of the season. Steelers-Colts, similar situation. And then, oh, by the way, Broncos, against all odds, are above 500. That's sad to say, but here's the thing. The Kansas City Chiefs have the Denver Broncos nipping at their heels.
Right.
Which is crazy to consider, but that's what we're looking at. We had the Raiders absolute. I don't know. Did you watch Thursday Night Football?
I didn't.
I watched the first half.
Doing?
It was 42. Anyway. It was 42-0 at halftime, Michelle. You didn't miss anything.
Oh.
The Raiders laid 63 points on the Chargers. It was 63-21 the final, and it wasn't even that close.
Wait, the Raiders put up that many points.
4 days after the Raiders lost a game to the Minnesota Vikings 3-0 in Las Vegas, they remained at home. The Chargers came in and got boat raced to the tune of 63-21. Two records were set in that game, Michelle. The most points ever scored in Raiders history in a game.
Yeah.
and the most points ever given up by the Los Angeles Chargers in franchise history. And, oh, by the way, the next day, Tom Telesco, the GM for the Chargers, as well as their head coach, I don't remember what's his name, they both got fired. They cleaned house.
Jeez. Gosh, this has been a weird year for NFL because the Dolphins and Broncos mm-hmm. had that absurd score,
yeah.
too.
Yep.
Like, twice in a single season having
60 point games, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
The NFL wants parity, and they're getting parity, but they have some of these games that they're getting more college type scores sometimes.
Yeah.
Which, you have the whole Tom Brady thing with him saying, well, it's a dumbed down version of the NFL I played. It's like, Tom.
Shut up, Tom. You benefited from so much.
You went to 10 Super Bowls, won 7 of them against this essentially what is playing right now.
Because you just retired last year. Yeah.
Like, come on now. It's just. But at the same time, it's been an interesting season because I think we have more quarterbacks have played this year than at any point in NFL history, which is crazy to consider. It happened because the Chargers started Easton Stick because
Justin Herbert
broke his finger. He's done for the season.
Jeez. Oh,
so it's
what a mess.
Yeah,
what a mess.
It's been kind of a wild NFL year, and I'm interested to see where it all goes. This is 3 weeks beyond this, and the playoffs start. Some very interesting storylines have emerged, and I think they will continue to emerge. Because, by the way, we have a jumbled mess. I think in the AFC, if I'm not mistaken, there's 4 or 5 teams at 7-6.
Oh my gosh!
Like, there's what the NFL wants is they want races down the stretch in terms of you win here, like they're getting that. It's setting up that way. But then you also have some of these outliers where the Raiders, 4 days after they were shut out at home, they put up 63 on a division rival.
I just, Raiders gonna do what Raiders gonna
do. No doubt. All right, crazy times. All right, we will close up shop next, give you some final thoughts, wrap up this edition of the Saturday Show. It's all coming up on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has
begun. Sarah, say. Okay. Sarah, right before we came back, said this song will forever remind her of Mean Girls. And I hadn't even thought about that connection in years, and it just brought me right back. Here's the thing. Mean Girls, incredible movie.
It is pretty funny.
Super quotable. Still relevant to this day, despite it being a different generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's Sarah.
She doesn't even go here.
Somebody was talking. I literally saw that meme pop up the other day about something. It was just an incredible, incredible movie. Just so. That's Sarah. That was awesome. Is where Brian Mean Girls.
Did you see they're making a new one?
Oh, don't.
Yeah.
Well,
where,
I mean, they've already made
where,
some new ones.
What's her name? Oh gosh, what's the main character? The redhead.
Oh,
Katie Herring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you talking about a real name?
Her real name.
Lindsay Lohan.
Why couldn't I think of it?
I'm trying to get which way you're going with the character name.
She's
the
principal of the school or something.
Oh, lovely.
Oh,
and
man.
There's a new set of plastics. Anyways, and now they're moms and they have daughters of their own. It's going to be interesting.
Well, it could either be great or not great. So we will see.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think there's room for middle ground
on
this.
No, there's not. And I'm sad to say that as most things go in Hollywood, it'll probably be a flop.
Yeah, it probably will not be good.
Considering that, man, talk about that first movie. It was absolutely incredible.
It was.
No doubt. All right. Well, that's not how I anticipated wrapping up the show, but Mean Girls, man. Uber quotable. My wife, to this day, with our kids, but the other day my daughter was saying something about, and my wife's like, I'm a cool mom. And I just started busting up.
I say that all the time now. because I have this, I like asking athletes what they're like listening to.
Sure.
And it's because I'm like now kind of on the verge of being old enough to be their mom. I'm like, because I'm a cool mom, not a regular mom.
My wife said it and I just started busting. My daughter looked over me like, why are you laughing at that comment? That's not that funny.
Yeah, that's not that funny. Just wait. Give it a few years. We will show you Mean Girls and you will get it.
Oh, so good. So good. All right, Michelle. Any final thoughts from you?
Get to the Huntsman Center and then rush home and turn on your TV and watch women's basketball.
By the way, I got to give props to the women's hoops team for Utah.
Yeah.
To be willing to go to Southern Utah, that's pretty impressive stuff.
Oh, like, yeah.
Because too often these days, we see in men's sports all the time, like, we ain't going there.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're going to come to us. No. Really cool that they're heading out on the road, obviously. Great game against South Carolina. Didn't go the way that they wanted to, but, oh, man, the accolades rolling in for Alyssa Peely after that one.
Well, woo-hoo! she's just absolutely incredible.
She is incredible. Like, and I'm glad that everybody else is starting to figure that
out.
Well,
and that game last week, the showcase, the environment was in, it put her on like even more people's radars. Like, hold on, this girl's really, really good. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we know that. If you pay attention, like, you would have picked up on it. But nonetheless, yes. So be it. But it is good to see what's going on now. Yeah, so is it a 2 o'clock and a 5 o'clock? Are those two starts?
Yes.
And then we have BYU basketball at 7. They're taking on Georgia State. They should push their record to what would be 12-1 at that point. And then also at 2 o'clock here on the zone, we have Utah State. They're over at the Delta Center. They're taking on USF, the Dons from the West Coast Conference. Originally, this game was going to be radio only, but they have now set up a stream where Scotty's voice is going to be both on the stream and on the radio. So,
good old Scotty G.
So tune into that. It'll be a 1:30 pregame here on the KSL Sports Zone. So tune into that. And obviously Jazz tonight as well. By the way, Talen Horton Tucker is questionable. Omer Yurtseven is out. So the flu bug, sickness bug is making its run through the Jazz like it did for the Utes at the tail end of the Ute season.
So fun.
Yeah, good times. All right. That's going to do it. You have any other things we need to know before we go?
No.
Okay. Well, Michelle's off to Vegas midweek next week. Yeah. So we will have her join us from Vegas on next week's Saturday show. Get her thoughts ahead of that game in the Las Vegas Bowl. But tune in all week long. We'll have plenty of coverage getting you ready for those games, both the famous Idaho Potato Bowl and the Las Vegas Bowl. So for Michelle and Sarah, I'm Jake. Have a great rest of your day. This has been the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.